this is Michelle Anderson, north of Bangor. And today I'm at the Cloud 9 restaurant in Augusta with Bill Beardsley. Hi, Mr. Beardsley. How are you?
Well, I'm great, Michelle. It's great to see you and have breakfast together and try to get caught up on what's going on up in the Great Maine Woods.
Now, I never remember your title, your exact title. Can you tell us what that is?
Well, I'm Commissioner of the Department of Conservation. And that involves LURC, it involves this merger with agriculture, it involves all the mineral resources of the state, the water resources, the parks and public lands, and that whole array, and obviously the Forest Service, which is, I just absolutely love the work.
Do you?
Yeah, I sure do. I'm not sure I love being, I'm coming out of the private sector, working in government. It's a very different pace and a very different philosophy. And
a lot of legislative hearings.
But it's necessary, and that's why I'm here.
Great. Well, the first thing I really would like you to tell my listeners about is the whole, the LURC bill and the controversy over that and what it really means.
Well, I think it's summed up. I was on a TV show with Lisa Pullman at the Natural Resource Council on television, public television, a month or two ago. And she basically said on television that the 10 million acres of northern Maine belongs to the people of Maine. And then afterwards, out in the parking lot, she basically said, you know, the issue is not conservation, it's ideology. And I think she really captured the issue right on the head. That there's a belief, who owns the natural resources of northern Maine? And if you look at land ownership, it's all private.
Mm-hmm.
And we've historically had a philosophy that you have private assets and your government's trying to say that we need to impose public values on those private assets, but they're primarily private. The other philosophy is that they really are public assets, like in the West, and you're trying to bring in private ownership and private people. It's a totally different philosophy. And to me, that's the issue that LURC is dealing with. And for the last 40 years, I think the emphasis of LURC in legislature, in statute, in the administration philosophies has been that LURC is to preserve and protect the Great Maine Woods. It doesn't deal with the economy, it doesn't deal with economic vitality, it doesn't deal with poverty, it doesn't deal with people, it doesn't deal with viability of small communities or service centers, it deals with protection and preservation. And it's done that. I think one of the things that's right now, it's coming out, you see it in editorials, you see it in the gray battle lines that are being drawn around LURC, is that, no, it's more than that. That LURC is about people. It's about people owning land. It's about livelihoods. It's about a way of life. It's about the fact that Maine has not been a wilderness for hundreds of years. It has a beautiful landscape. It has things that all Maine people value. It wants to protect its most precious and undeveloped mountains and streams and lakes. But above and beyond that, it's a place where people live and they identify with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this whole LURC reform is trying to bring together, in my opinion, is how do you balance that? How do you say, yes, we all want to preserve and protect that beautiful thing that not only the people that live there love and want to take care of, but the whole state does and the nation does. And at the same time, I mean, the average family income in the LURC counties, big LURC counties of Piscataquis and Somerset and Aroostook and Washington is about, I think, about $28,000 of family income. In Maine is $48,000 the family income. In New Hampshire is $60,000. And you say to yourself, why is it? If the U.S. News and World Report last week had this map of New England, and it showed colored in blue where the poorest old people were and the poorest young people. And in the northeastern United States, half of the geography that showed the worst poverty was LURC counties in all of the northeastern United States. The rest were lighter shades of blue all the way to white.
Uh-huh.
Now, there aren't many people in that LURC area, but I think this administration and a lot of us that have strong ties to rural Maine and things like that say, you know, first of all, that's tragic. We should try to fix it. And second of all, it's not necessary. And I think when we look at it, is yeah, we've got this beautiful ecology that other people have lost. We've got these beautiful streams, and people come to be near here, and people like go to work at Jackson Lab, not because it's the best place to do genetic research in the world, but because we have this beautiful landscape, this beautiful ocean, this beautiful woods. So yes, that's a huge factor. But we've also got half the commercial timberland in the northeastern United States. We've got billions of dollars of mineral reserves. We've got water surpluses that can be converted and value added. Don't dry down the streams so it hurts the salmon, but if you've got surplus water, you know, take water to the Middle East and backhaul it back into Maine. It's that kind of thing that a lot of people say, you know, there are opportunities that won't destroy this thing that we love. And so it's that battle. It's what this whole issue in legislature over takings are. Mm-hmm. Maine has this very, very, this philosophy that you can take 99% of a person's worth of their land and depress the value of their land. But if they can still put a tent on it or still do something, there's no taking. And so one of the big question that some of the more conservative people are saying is, this whole philosophy, this constitution of this country is based on the idea that there is such a thing as private property and you have some rights. So I think what we're trying to do right now is stay with, and a lot of conservatives get mad about, but stay with this idea that there are public values. Mm-hmm. And we have to admit the air is public, the water is public, the wildlife's public, the fisheries are public. Those are public properties.
You think forever?
And
it's going to stay like that?
Well, they've always been. You know, and but the land and the things that grow on it that have roots belong to people. And it's theirs. And that's what this country's based around. I mean, the serfs came from Russia. The slaves came. That others have come to this country to get access to public, private land, to have their own sense of property. And in England, there's primogeniture, and so the peasants could never get it because some lord could pass it on in perpetuity.
Right.
And I think the people that have this philosophy that know it really is public, a public good in this day and age, and that's where we're trying to find a balance that acknowledges and protects. And the LIRC Commission is tied into that. The staff I have is tied into that. And that's what makes this LIRC debate so meaningful, so important, so critical that we handle it right.
Well, can you tell me what, looking at the new way of LIRC versus the old way, do you think that we're making progress here? Do you think?
Very much so. There's the ACF Committee, Agriculture, Conservation, Forestry Committee, has what they call a bucket. And they haven't voted on it, but they've thrown things into the bucket that they agree on. You know, the environmentalists, the conservatives, the Democrats, the Republicans. I mean, there's this pot that they've been throwing things into. And one, they believe that the mission of what LIRC should be shouldn't just be preservation and protection. Leave that, but talk about economic vitality, private property rights, and things like that. That there's a balance. And everybody agrees, you know, that makes sense. Everybody agrees. Why is it we do all of the planning for LIRC in Augusta, on a fourth floor of a building in the old AMI Mental Health Institution?
Right.
And the answer is, yeah, we reach out, but we always come home before dark. We have to permit people that are out in the field.
Right.
So there's a shared toss into the bucket, this idea that we've got to get a way to get our planners, the state people that are working on this, out there. But the other side of it is, you take Aroostook County, you got Bob Clark at the Northern Maine Development Corporation. He's got 13 planners on his staff up there. When people say counties and rural areas don't know how to plan, and I look at this tremendous group of people that have got GIS specialists, they've got environmental specialists, they've got infrastructure specialists, they've got housing specialists, and this is in Aroostook County. I say to myself, and so I think what there's this bucket that says, yeah, we need to engage and have the counties or regions or watersheds or service areas around a place like Millinocket or whatever get much more involved. And they'll say, we'll get more involved. Do you have information? So we're beginning to look at how does LIRC provide good statewide information to local areas so they can get more involved. That's quite a radical change from the concern that in the past local areas, county governments, regional planners, watershed people, have been marginalized if they haven't been invited to the table. Or if they've been invited, they speak what they have to say, but it's so many people invited to the table. I mean, everybody can be an intervener in the planning and permitting process. You don't have to live there or reside there, or own land there, or have a business there.
You just have to be there to show up. Right.
And so what happens is a lot of, you've only got 10 or 12,000 people, they get dwarfed. And so what we're trying to say is, let's codify that. Well, everybody said, hey, that makes common sense. And right now there's a move towards saying, how do you have representatives on the LURC Commission from rural areas? And we do now, but all the appointments are made in Augusta by the governor and are confirmed by. And the idea of what would happen if some of the appointments of people that served actually came from the counties where LURC existed. Not necessarily all from LURC, but from the service areas around there and stuff like that. And what would happen if we had elected officials from those areas have some say in it? Now, the debate immediately focuses on, can they appoint themselves? Well, I couldn't care less about that. That's a political issue that can be resolved. Mm-hmm. But everybody's kind of saying, you know, it does make some sense. Because at least elected officials are people that have been elected. And a bunch of people that oppose this say, we don't like who's been elected. I will guarantee you, Michelle, that if this law were to go through in some form, those people that don't like it will start running for state government. I mean, they're going to start running for county government. They're
going to, they've got to say,
if you want to save the environment, put me on the county council. So my feeling is that's how democracy works. Right now, the focus is in corrections and the sheriff and the roads and things like that and real estate and things like that. But I tell you that if counties or regional development planners or things like that, or the service area like Millinocket, suddenly said, hey, we're going to really have a lot to say about land use planning, you're going to see a much different kind of livelihood. People like you saying, I'm going to get involved. So that's why I'm optimistic, is, yeah, there's this real battle lines drawing, and the opt-out, of course, is the biggest item. And to me, the opt-out is, you know, it's sort of, if you read the first paragraph of the Constitution, of the Declaration of Independence, everybody in the colonies is saying, oh, King George or whatever, we're going to try so hard. We really want to be part of England, and we really want to be respected, you know, all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. We like our heritage. We like this stuff. And then the second paragraph says, but if things get so bad, if we get ignored so often, if we get deprived, you know, so much that we're totally ignored, there is a point where we're going to say enough is enough.
Right.
And that's the way I kind of look at the opt-out. I look at a town like Millinocket or somewhere like that wants to put in a new paper machine or something like that, and the place to put it is in the unorganized township between Millinocket and East Millinocket. That's the place to put it. And if LURC were to say no, I can see eventually the town of Millinocket say, well, why don't we let Penobscot County get involved in this process, and we'll go to the county and we'll pay whatever it costs, because putting that paper machine in is going to be $500 million investment. It's worth so much. Well, just with that threat that is very, very unlikely, but just with the possibility that at some point we want something so bad that's a good idea and it's good for the environment, it's good for jobs, it's good for everything, then what you'll find is the LURC Commission and the statewide planners are going to say, we've got to get our act together and pay some more attention to it. And if you take away the opt-out, then what you, and I'm saying, I don't mind making it extremely difficult. You have to wait for 5 years. You've got to have a county charter. You've got to have this. You've got to have that. It's got to be approved by the legislature, by the governor, I mean, all that kind of stuff. But just having something there means that rural Maine people, it's more difficult to ultimately ignore their dreams and aspirations. They have a little bit of leverage, mm-hmm. and that's the sticking point. Should they have any? And the thing is, people have been promised time and time again, we're listening to you, we'll do what you say, we agree with you, we're sympathetic. And then the same people turn around 2 or 3 years later and said, we were ignored. Mm-hmm. We were listened to and we were ignored. We were at the table and our views were never represented.
I think that that's part of the problem that's happening right now in this stage of the game. The whole idea in the beginning was the bill said we're going to abolish LURC. And then they had the hearings.
Send it to the counties, yeah.
And they had the hearings. And then I don't know what happened. There was a turn made that nobody expected. And we're gonna have a committee. Well, I don't know. People in northern Maine, anyway, don't so much like things done by committee. And you know that there's a perception that same old, you know. And that's sort of why I wanted to talk to you about it, is to find out why is it not the same old? Why are we looking at the equivalent of a bunch of czars? There's a perception in northern Maine, in some parts of northern Maine anyway, that in order to get LURC to approve something, you have to be connected, or you have to... You know, there's all of these things that you know, the average guy can't go in and get things done. You have to know somebody, you have to have something, you have to give something. And I think that that's really the problem. Whether it's true or not really isn't the issue at all. The issue is that's the perception. And you know, I know you've read it, that the perception is, oh, this is just a bigger, meaner, leaner, meaner, bigger.
The Roger Eck view of the world.
So, I mean, how do you address that?
Everything seems polarized. You're either all for no zoning and no nothing, or the extreme, it's not true. You know, you've got environmental groups that have been very supportive of the changes, and you've got environmental groups that are dead against it. You've got landowners that are very supportive of the changes, and you've got landowners that, for instance, are very nervous if they own land in multiple counties. The idea that each county might have a different way of saying something would really undermine their ability to make wise decisions, to invest wisely and stuff like that. So there's a lot of gray stuff in the middle. You don't, maybe in Washington there is too, but you don't see it on the surface. But there's a lot of views that there are decisions that transcend these things. So not everybody's uniform in their desire, and we're not a county government. We Maine, unlike so much of the eastern United States, did not go to the county form of government historically in our constitution and stuff. Like, we're home rule, and so I think there's some hesitation. And you get conservatives like Mary Adams that talks about the county should do this and that, and you got other conservatives that said no, we should have home rule and we should not go the county route. That's just another layer of government. And so you've got, even among conservatives, there's a tension. So I think what it is how do we make absolutely sure that local views are much more substantial? And this idea was, there's some logic in having some statewide thinking and planning so we don't have different roles in every kind of county, but let's do it by, let's make sure that county elected officials have much more to say as who's on the board that makes the decision.
Okay.
And they may not agree. I mean, you know, a person that's appointed from Piscataquis might be furious that the person appointed from Penobscot has got a free ride and is going for a big company, and they might oppose it. So
and I'm sure they would.
Yeah, so there's going to be rivalry and who gets the seaport and who gets the, you know, or doesn't get the East-West Highway or whatever those things are. Mm-hmm. I mean, the battles won't go away because they're different philosophies. But I think that's what it's saying. Yeah, if the counties actually had some significant influence, and it was elected officials involved in it, so that if they screwed up, they could be thrown out. They're not just appointed.
Okay.
Then
is that where it stands
little
right
bit,
now?
Yeah, that's where it stands right now. Now, there's a proposal that, in fact, that they'd have to be ratified by the legislature or something like that, and the purists would say, absolutely not. But on the other hand, you say, you know, legislature is very unlikely to start saying, I'm not going to have that person, but I will have this person. So there's some compromises if you want to get something done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested in moving, you know, the governor is interested in really moving things further, but somehow make sure that economics is at the table. So if you change the law, the governing law, the mission, which everybody agrees to, and suddenly the livelihood of local people, the property rights are mentioned in the law for the first time, then you've got something to go to court with. You've got something to really enforce that. There's something where the plan is to say, oh, okay, if we're supposed to deal with that.
There's some hope.
Yeah. And we've got great people on our planning staff and stuff like that. It's just that and they've been fulfilling what the statutes say. Well, the statutes never paid any attention
to anything but
the people, the economy, the service areas, and stuff like that.
So this is all still in process, am I right?
Oh, well, we're meeting on it this afternoon. We had a public hearing this afternoon, and I'm sure Roger Eck will be there. And my son will be battling me from the right. And all my other friends, from the Nature Conservancy and from the, the environmental side of it. And I'm ducking weave. But there's no, in my little chapel, there's no comfortable pews right now, I can tell you.
Well, if my listeners wanted to get involved, if they, would like a say, or they want to know what's going on as this formation is going on, how can they do that?
Well,
or can they?
Well, first of all, they can listen in on stuff. I mean, the state, all these things are broadcast. Mm-hmm. You can get in on the state broadcast, and you can actually listen to the hearing. I don't think you can participate through that. The chairs are Roger Sherman and Peter Edgecombe. Roger's from Halton and Peter Edgecombe's from Caribou. And, they are very, very accessible. And you've got all the interest groups that are all there. I mean, wherever your leaning is, you can find an interest group that is sitting right there with their little laptop. Nobody takes notes anymore. It's all this little laptop
stuff.
So you don't even know who's there because their heads are right in their little laptop.
That concludes the first part of my discussion with Bill Beardsley. The second part, which is about the merger, is available in part 2, which is directly below this recording on the North of Bangor site.